Hey, check it out. You're smoking with your boy Joe Thunder. This podcast brought to you by Be Good Dispensary, our official sponsor. Bringing the latest and greatest in hip hop and the arts and cannabis culture. With co-host Elvis Freshly and DJ Sin. Hey, what's going on? It's your boy Joe Thunder back once again with another episode of the Smoking with Joe Thunder podcast. I got my co-host Elvis Freshly in the building.
Yo, what it do?
Chilling. I got a one-huh. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm here, you know, just making moves.
Making moves chilling. Like always, right? Just
high already.
You already know, man. I got off of work and fuck,
been up since
man.
Early. I'm already. You know.
Not a day go by. Don't get high. Don't hydrated. Ask why. You know, so yeah, I've been hydrating too, man. You know what I'm saying? But shout out to our official sponsor, Be Good Dispensaries. You know what I mean? Over there on 11 West Hamden, they got all your medical or all your marijuana needs. You know what I mean? Anything you need, where are they up north?
114th and Cherokee.
Oh, yeah. Go check
the
them out.
From Boondocks.
They got that Llama, Zopax. They got all that good stuff. Yeah. Shout out to Sin. She can't be here with us. I think she's in the MIAO, you know, doing her thing for our Basil. You know what I mean?
Getting it.
But shout out. Dope. But we got to keep it pushing. We got another dope episode for you today. I don't even know where I start, man. This guy is he's a producer. He's a DJ. He's a pianist. He's just a dope motherfucker, man. Like, we got Q-Knox in the building. What's going on, G?
What's going on?
Not shit.
Good to see you. Good to see you.
Welcome.
How you been, bro?
I'm feeling good.
Appreciate you.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has been a minute.
It definitely has been a minute.
It's been since... Even before COVID. Yeah.
When I took my little hiatus.
Yeah.
I kind of disappeared off the map. You know what? It happens every once in a while. Sometimes you know, shit happens, you know. But it's been a minute, but we're here now.
We're here now. I'm glad it's good to disappear like that. That's what COVID did for everybody, man. We all kind of had to disappear for a minute.
Right. That was good.
No doubt. So what'd you do during COVID, man? You picked up a new hobby, right?
I did.
To add to the beat making, to turn to DJing, and playing the piano and teaching, you added a new
all that stuff
skill set to the hobby.
I did. I started baking.
Oh shit!
I did. I like it. I was
Betty Crocker.
I was talking to Kid Hum. Shout out Kid Hum.
Yeah, shout out Kid Hum. I won't talk to him in a minute either.
I was talking to Kid Hum, and he said the kitchen is like the new spa, and that was totally what it was. It was like.
That's dope.
Yeah, I would spend time in there, and it was like ingredients wouldn't like say stupid shit to me. Mm-hmm. Ingredients wouldn't like have
That's
weird
right.
problems happening that they had no answers for.
Yeah, sorry, like opinions.
Start at the beginning of the recipe. Right. And
they didn't even
the
really
end.
Talk or say much. They just
they
taste
shit.
Good.
They just taste good. Right. Yeah. So I've been doing all kinds of, and I started trying to bake because I love to cook.
Right.
But baking is so tough. It's like all of the measuring you have to do, all the crazy shit that you have to be real exact
timing.
With.
Right.
Timing. Yeah. Yeah, so.
What's your
great.
Favorite thing?
I tell you, croissant dough. Making croissant dough is my favorite thing.
Okay.
Yeah. You get a big square of butter, and you put it inside the dough, and then you roll it out. And then you fold it up, and you roll it out, and you fold it up, and you roll it
out. That sounds
crazy.
There's
so much butter. I love it.
So much butter.
When I talked to you about this, you said you just wanted to make anything and everything to do with dough, right?
Yeah. I did like the croissants. I did all sorts of breads. I did all sorts of like, I want to do phyllo. Phyllo is the dough I have not done yet.
What
like
is
to make
phyllo? You have to explain that to me because I am not familiar.
No, you know baklava.
It's not phyllo.
Baklava is like, shout out to Jerusalem.
Yeah, baklava. Yeah,
Jerusalem
restaurant.
It's like the flaky. The
that's
flaky.
Like the best. That's the best baklava.
Exactly.
It's like
and
the flaky
like
stuff,
Jerusalem's
right?
Little tiny,
shit.
Like real thin dough, and then pistachios and honey all between it.
Mm.
So that's your goal.
Good. Yeah, I need some of that.
That's one of the, yes, that's one of the things I have not made yet.
So you could make some baklava.
Baklava.
I could do baklava. I want to do baklava.
Baklava.
So. It's going to take a long time.
And fucking probably roll the blunt at the same time, right?
I could try and do that.
That
it's all about timing, you know?
Right.
It's all about timing.
Right. When in the process do you do which step?
Oh, man. I think
you got to roll the blunt first.
You got to roll the blunt first. You got to warm up on piano and roll the blunt at the same time.
Or actually, if you're baking, you got to roll three blunts first, you know?
That's probably a good idea. It depends on what you're baking, how long it's taken.
Right.
Yeah. Three blunts is a good starting point.
Now, have you added any herbals to your dough yet, or is that in the works?
I haven't done any herbs in the dough.
The butter, like you said, just think of it like that when you're making the croissant. A big old pound of marijuana butter in that bitch. Gonna have everyone fucked up at the party. We're gonna get lit.
It'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, that or everyone's sleeping by nine. And the whole party's just passed out.
Edible croissants.
That would be kind of tight.
You could do that. Just have a bake sale.
Right.
You know?
I know some homegirl that makes tortillas. They make all kinds of. They'll actually kind of make everything. Anything you want, bro. You could tell them like anything and they'll make it and it'll be weed.
Mm-hmm. The get baked sale.
Infused. Yeah, because even these days, even if you made a dish already and put just tincture on it, you'd be good.
Right. Right.
You could do all sorts of stuff. Yeah. That'd be good. I wanted to try and do it the real traditional, like basic from beginning to end way first. Mm-hmm. And then then whatever happens after that.
Right.
It's all sorts of ideas, you know? Like
he said, ideas. I like that word right there. Like, for real. Like, because we have plenty of them, you know what I mean?
You don't remember all of them, but.
Right. No, because they're always high.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, damn, what was that shit I was thinking about last night?
Did I put cinnamon on the peanut butter and then toasted it?
Right.
Or did I toast it and then put the peanut butter on?
I was talking about it earlier, like. When you're tripping acid or something all crazy, you come up with like you all of a sudden understand the universe and all the shit, and then you like 10 minutes later you're like, what the fuck was I just thinking about again?
I had the greatest, profoundest idea, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I know it was a great.
I can't explain it.
Right.
But every time I'm tripping, it's always like somebody's there with me. I always look at the friends that I'm with, and I'm always like, oh, you know what I'm talking about, right? They're like, no, you haven't said anything for like 10 minutes. Yeah. We don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm thinking?
You know what's going on, though, right? With the peanut butter and the flowers. Yeah. That's like, what? I have no idea.
Well, that's fucking tight. You picked up a new hobby during quarantine, man. You've been kind of keeping with it, you know?
Kept me sane, you know? A lot of remote teaching. Yeah. But for the first like couple of weeks, it hit in March, you know? So they sent us home a week before spring break was supposed to happen.
Oh, shit.
So we were like, well, great. Awesome. Fuck. We're going to go down a week before. And then when spring break was over, they were like, stay another week.
Stay an extra week. Right.
So we had another week after spring break before we had to start doing remote learning because they just kept hoping things were going to go back. Right. But that 3 weeks of spring break was awesome. Yes. You couldn't go anywhere. Proper. You couldn't do anything.
But it was great.
Yeah.
At first.
Yeah, it was great. And then it was like really set in that this might be something that's going to be here for a long term. So,
and kids are finally back in school now, right?
Kids are back in school. We were back in school at the end of last year. Because I'm a music teacher and I have every single class in the building, it means that when remote learning happened or when they came back to the building, I couldn't go to the school because I couldn't like go in the first grade room, then go in the second grade room, then bring all my germs to the third grade room, then the fourth grade room. So they put me on a TV, like I had a TV that was up on a cart, and I would have
you're like Max,
getting and wheeled around. I would be on the TV, and there was a speaker at the bottom, and they would wheel me into the classroom, and I would be at home, and I would teach from home, but I would be in their classroom as some kind of like TV show. Damn. So I taught a lot of kids at the end of last year that I didn't even meet in person. Until this year, until they started coming to school this year.
That's wild.
And kids, especially like the kindergartners, they made friends online that they never met in person, in real life, until like the next year.
Right.
That's
and
crazy.
I was so crazy the first day of school because I knew what class they were going to, so I wanted to watch when they found their friend for the first time.
Right.
So it was like, it's like watching like two people at an airport or something that haven't seen each other in years. They're like so excited to see each other.
Yeah, that definitely has to be rough on the kids because they really don't know what's going on. They can't comprehend anything. They just know that something's wrong and they can't leave the house. You know what I mean?
Yep, for sure. And then they have friends that get it and friends' parents that get it or everybody knows somebody's uncle that got it or grandma that got it.
Even past,
yeah, and the kids are super honest about it. You know, they're like...
That's what I was just about to get to. We were talking about that the other day about how like the kindergartners don't lie.
They don't lie.
They don't lie.
That's all your business, too.
Yeah, man, that's protocol. Every day I have to say, hey, are you okay? Have you been around anybody that has COVID? And I have to take your temperature. Do you have a cough? And so some kids, you know, kids are honest. They're like, yeah, my uncle has COVID. We were just, you know, or they'll be like, yeah, I had a cough this morning. And we got to be like, well, you can't come to school. You know, you got to go talk to the nurse. You got to go get tested. We got to get your positive test. Then you can come back. And that usually takes a long time.
Yeah. And then, like you said, that's rough on the parents because then the parents have to take days off from work because, I mean, they got to now deal with this. And
exactly. I feel so bad for them, you know, because I know it's some of those kids, too. It's it's a cold. You don't have COVID. You just got a cold. Or there was something that was like, I've even had a couple of kids that will try to cough for me when they're in line because they're like, I don't want to go to school. Right. And
they know that, like, little badass kids.
They know that, like, even if I hear you coughing in class, I got to say, like, yo, are you okay?
Right.
Is this something you've been doing all day? Like, because then I got to send you to the nurse.
Right.
It's crazy. But the kids, what's good about, like, the age that I teach the elementary school kids is that they really still do wear their masks. They really love, they don't mind wearing them. Right. They've been so used to it, and they love, like, getting the new ones or, like,
the coolest.
My mask has this Minecraft shit on it, or it has this Paw Patrol shit. They're super excited about it. So they still wear them, and they like, even sometimes when they're, and they don't have to all the time when they're outside, but they do still sometimes. Some of them, and I find myself doing it too, where it's like I sit in my room and I don't have any classes in there, and I don't have to be wearing my mask, but I'm still wearing my mask because I'm just so used to it. And it's just like, I'll realize, like, oh shit, I still got this on.
That should be hurting my ears, bro. I feel like it's going to fucking tear my ears off and shit. You know what I'm saying?
It was like, I remember when you could wear, and everybody wore the medical masks.
Right.
And then it was like, okay, no big deal. They all fit. They were pretty light. And then people started making the cloth masks, and some of them were comfortable, and some of them weren't comfortable.
Not at all, yeah.
We found out that there was those things, and I don't know, you know about the, they have like 3D plastic molds you can put over your mouth.
Uh-huh.
So that you can, and you put it on your face, and then you put the mask over it. So that when you're talking or breathing or whatever you're doing, the mask is away from your lips and you don't, like, suck it in
with
you when you're trying to do it. So when we were teaching, and it was like, you know, my regular talking voice, but then there's my teacher voice, and then there's the voice when I'm not happy with you and I need to be loud, and that voice with the mask on is tough.
Right.
So when I put those things on, it makes it a little bit easier. Okay. But we've gotten used to it. I can still do a teacher voice without the mask.
Can you give us an example of the teacher voice real quick?
Well, okay, so the other day, I just dismissed a class from my room, and they were walking into the cafeteria. And every time you walk into the cafeteria, you've got to be quiet, because by the cafeteria is where some of our really little kids are. Like, we have some of the kids that are toddlers.
Yeah.
And so they're sleeping, and we never know when they're sleeping. They're just sleeping. So when you're in the hallway, you got to be quiet. And I heard them out there, and I heard them being loud. And I went outside, and there was like 3 classes in the cafeteria. And mind you, the teachers are out there too. I was kind of like, you should be telling kids to be
quiet.
What
are you guys doing?
Yeah. And I was like, everybody stop. Everyone stop now. Freeze.
Yep, that's the teacher voice for sure.
Yeah. But I also like the teacher voice when you get real soft. Like, if it's just one kid sometimes, you get real soft and you go right up to him. Here's how this is going to go. Good afternoon, Miss Johnson. This is Mr. Jared. I'm calling you because your son. And I'll just go through, like, the whole fake phone call that I'm about to have with his mom or his dad or her mom or her dad.
Right.
Yeah. And it checks him real quick.
Yeah, because I just get, so here's how this is going to go. And that's usually all I have to do.
That's it right there.
But it's kids are so funny, you know. Kids, you have to figure kids out, and sometimes kids really respond to certain things that other kids don't respond to. Because some kids figure out that you can just say no. Like, in the long run, I can't make you do anything.
Right.
If you don't want to do it and you say no and you stop and you just want to stand there in the hallway, I can't do anything.
Yeah, right.
And so you might not have realized it, but you just figured it out, kid.
Right.
You just figured it out. And sometimes we have one of those kids, and we do have one this year, who is just like, nah. And he just went limp in the hallway, just laying down.
Like Donovan.
Like, yo, you do have to leave. Right. You do have to take your body and take it out of this hallway.
Right.
Nah.
I don't.
Nah, I don't want it. It's so tough, and you feel so bad for him, you know, because it's, you know how people at baseball games and basketball games and concerts don't know how to act
right
now? Like, school is just a
little concert
movie like that. They're just copying their parents, and they're seeing everything that they see, you know?
Right.
And so they're acting the exact same way. Yeah. They're acting the exact same way. They don't know how to be around each other.
See what they can get away with.
Yeah. And, like, yo, I remember school. I had to sit at home. I didn't have to listen to you. I was sitting at home. I could go get something to eat if I wanted to. Like, what's this school? I don't know about this.
Right.
Now I have to stay here the whole time?
Right.
I love it when kindergartners ask me what time it is. Like, even if I told you what time it was, you wouldn't know what time it was.
I
could say 17:12, and you would have no idea.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Okay.
So honestly, what you're kind of saying, too, is like, this whole COVID's kind of fucked up their perception as well. Because now they're like, I don't really have to be here. Or
It's
like you said, no really supervision, because you can't really discipline or I mean, you can supervise a kid, but I mean, you can't really supervise them over, you know what I mean?
No.
Remote.
Yo, if you left your screen area and you were gone, I didn't have any idea where you were.
Right.
I had no idea. And I got 26 other kids on that screen.
Right.
You know? So I'm now thinking, well, how long have you been gone? Right. And then I'm like, well, what the fuck is he doing? And so sometimes after class, I would have to call and be like, yo.
Call the parents.
I saw Isak was on, and now he's not on anymore. I was like, where's he at? And she'll go in the room and, like, find him under the bed or something. Or he's like, or kids are sleeping, you know?
Sleeping, yeah.
And I always tell them, even when they come to class at the school, I'm like, yo, if you need to sleep, like, that's totally okay. Like, if you feel like you want to go take a nap because it's like you were up late, who knows what had to happen? Right, like, yo, go take a nap. I don't want your grumpy ass or whatever. I don't, you know.
Right.
Our that's cool.
Kindergartners grumpy?
Kindergartners are hella grumpy. And they're still too young to know why. They don't, like... Because the first thing I ask a kindergartner when they're mad is like, yo, are you hungry? You want some of these Cheez-Its?
Right, like, right.
Yeah.
That's usually the answer.
Like, okay, yeah, I do. You're right.
They just don't know.
You're right.
Yeah.
Or like, are you tired? What time do you go to bed?
Yeah.
Did you stay up late watching movies again? Yo, kids be watching crazy movies.
Right.
So we had a Halloween, like, parade where the kids got to dress up on a Saturday morning.
Right.
And so parents got to come. It was outside. It was great. We had like kids dressing up like Squid Game, like with the masks and everything.
No shit.
And they're like third and fourth graders. It was crazy.
It's like you're just watching this shit. They're
they're
all desensitized.
It's
crazy.
They were super excited because when Halloween happened, I taught them the Michael Myers theme on piano.
Because
they asked me, they were like the Halloween song, that Halloween song, and I kept like, oh, I don't know if this is the one that you're thinking of, and then I played it, and they were like, oh, that's the one.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the one.
Like, oh shit, how do you know about this song? So,
maybe watch some crazy shit.
Maybe watching crazy
like
shit.
The movie just came out, dude.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to talk to you about
Squid Games.
No,
you're not going to tell me your favorite parts, right?
No. But they also every month, every class gets to come up with their own new mix CD.
Uh-huh.
So basically they like tell me their favorite song and they write down their favorite song and I'll put it all on a mix CD. And then they get to listen to it at their little listening stations. So they'll write down the song if they know the title, which they usually don't. Or they'll write down the artist. And a lot of the times I'm like, yo, I cannot play NBA Youngboy.
Right.
I cannot put Roddy Ricch on
this
CD.
Shit. Yeah.
And I have to explain to them too, like, yo, even if you tell me to play the clean version, the entire subject matter of this song is the strip club and drugs, and I'm not going to play it. I'm just not going to do it.
That's hilarious.
I cannot put it on there.
Yeah, just because it's not cussing.
Yeah, I was like, even if there's
still
no
the
cuss
content.
Words. Exactly. And when Old Town Road came out, I was like, because he fooled everybody saying when he was talking about lean, because nobody over 50 knows what lean is. My mom doesn't know what lean
is. Right, absolutely.
So when he says lean all in my bladder, I was like, well, that does it. I'm not going to play this song. And I was like, and I told the kids, I was like, because he talks about drugs, I played the Kidz Bop version. I'll play the instrumental.
Right.
I'll play all that shit, but I will not play the original song. And then I saw all these YouTube videos of everybody playing it and everybody doing it. And I kind of felt bad. I was like, yo, they don't know what lean is either. You know?
Right.
I listened to, you know, all sorts of stuff that I had no idea what that meant.
Right. I feel you.
Ain't No Fun came out, and I was like 12 years old. I didn't know what that meant, you know?
Right.
I get it.
So I kind of felt bad, but they love to come up with those CDs, and it's always crazy to see what they're into.
What's some of the hot shit that they're putting on there right now?
You know, they asked me to put on the theme songs from all sorts of different anime shows. So they'll say, I want the opening theme for Naruto season one, the opening theme song. And I love anime. Every anime theme song is the same. It's the exact same.
It doesn't change.
It's like really fast, up-tempo rock that's really intricate and has all these... It's like 4 minutes long. It's got all these crazy twists and turns. But in the end, it's like, I'm not going
to
get in my car and be like, yo, play Naruto opening season.
I'm
just not going to do it.
Right.
I'm gonna when Netflix asks me if I want to skip the intro, I'm pushing that button right away.
Always.
Yeah. So they love those. They put the theme song from My Hero Academia and Naruto and what was another one? All sorts of those. But NBA Youngboy, they love NBA Youngboy. They love Meg Thee Stallion. They love Doja Cat.
All the stuff they're not supposed to be listening to.
They love Cardi B. It was like a real battle when Bodak Yellow came out for me to not play it. They were upset. The fourth and fifth grade girls were upset.
Oh, for sure.
They did not want me to be like. And then they all, there's some of those songs that the kids like that they do TikTok dances to that are the weirdest songs ever. Chicken Wing, you know the Chicken Wing song?
Oh, yeah.
Chicken Wing is a weird song. And I bang with kids because kids don't. They don't have comedy that makes sense. Right. All of the comedy that they like is like those new Skittles commercials, where for the whole commercial, you're like, what is going on?
Right.
And then they're like, Skittles. Why was it a unicorn just like swimming in mud like with Kevin Hart? Like, this doesn't make sense. But kids love that shit. So they, if it doesn't make sense and if it's like really bizarre, they're super into it. They love it. So those Chicken Wing songs, like... they still, fucking I'll tell you, Whip and Nene has lasted the test of
that's
time.
That's the one right there. I was just that's about to the say. That's the one. Whip and Nene. I just heard a, seen a video the other day. I'm like, damn, this people are still
bumping. Still going on?
They're still getting it.
Post Malone, because they because Post Malone did that song for the Spider-Man movie.
Right.
And so they all know and love that song. BTS. Everybody loves BTS.
Right.
And do you know this group, Blackpink? They're another Korean pop band. Girl group.
No.
And they're called Blackpink. And
they're killing it.
They've got dope stuff on there.
Right.
It's very like.
That's tight.
They've got all the science to make a good pop music album.
Right.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, shit. Enough about teaching, because there's a whole other side to you that they might not know about.
Oh.
And I'm talking about producing and playing the piano.
Yep.
Yeah. You got started at a very early age, right?
I did. When I was 5, I started taking piano lessons. My mom is a piano player and still plays to this day. Uh-huh. And is a great piano player.
How would you rate her out of 1 to 10?
Well, it's easy because my mom has things that she's really good at.
Okay.
And I have things that I'm really good at, and they're totally different. So I will call her to have her help me with things that she's really good at when I have to do them, and she'll do the same thing. My mom hates to improvise. She doesn't want to play anything on the piano unless it's on a piece of paper in front of her.
Oh, okay.
It terrifies her.
And you're different. You want
to
freestyle.
And I love to improvise. I don't want the music up there. Yeah. And so if she has a moment where she has to play something and they were like, well, can you play like a little blues little lick at the end? And she'll be like, and she'll call me and she'll have me write something out for her.
Okay, gotcha.
So that she can play it. But my mom is also, if you put any piece of sheet music in front of my mom, no problem. She'll read it right away.
Got it.
She can read it no matter what it is.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Do you jam out together?
Yeah, we've definitely played together. The last time I think we seriously played together was when I had my senior, like every senior at the School of the Arts had this recital that you had to put on, and mom and me played a song on two pianos.
Mm. That's dope.
So, yeah, we used to play a lot together.
Like you said, you started out early, like 5 years old, right?
Yep. Taking piano lessons, really just in a method too that was very creative, that really encouraged to like write music, and a method that encouraged to kind of find out the inner workings of music, which is a lot of why I love to improvise and kind of make stuff up, because it helped me to understand kind of the bones of what was going on. So that was all the way. I mean, I still take lessons if I go into a place where I have a teacher that I want to take with, or somebody comes into town. But that led into middle school and high school, which was Denver School of the Arts, which I played piano at every day.
Talk about that. You said it was like one big hallway with how many pianos?
Yeah. So must have been 95, 96.
Was it still in Cole, or was it already its own building?
Nope, it was at Cole Middle School.
Yeah, it was at Cole. Huh?
So if you were in middle school, you went to Cole for your regular classes, and then you just went to the other part of the building the other part of the building. I mean, it was all one building everywhere. But
the DSA section.
Yeah, and if you were in high school, you went to Manual High School, and then you walked from Manual to Cole when you had your arts classes.
Right.
So they just kind of trusted high school kids were going to walk from Manual to Cole.
Right.
Go to class every day. But it was really in the beginning of the school. And so there wasn't a whole bunch of money. And the pianos that we had to practice on when I had my classes that were for the piano majors were all out in the same hallway. So we used to have like 8 pianos on one side of the hallway and 8 pianos on another side of the hallway. And it was a giant hallway, but we all used to practice right next to each other. Just like when somebody playing over here, somebody playing over here, and just walking back and forth, like talking to each other about stuff, and lots of different collaborations with people where you would never, like I had a friend of mine that played gospel and he played organ. And when I was in sixth and seventh grade, I didn't know anything about gospel music.
Right. Right.
I grew up in the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church was very strict right. about what you played. And I played at Catholic churches for sure.
Right.
I played at every denomination, but the gospel player would always, at school, anytime we had a guest artist, he would always be like, "Do you play any gospel music?" He would always ask everybody, and we always used to like expect that question to come out. But he invited me and my family one day to go to church, and it was Anchor of Hope. Mm. Anchor of Hope is a really, 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 really old church here in Denver, and it was a crazy experience for me because I was a white kid coming from Catholic background, so church was an hour long. Right. As I knew church, it was like right. first this, then this, then this, then I get to go home.
Right.
That's how it went. But church here was like, whew, it was like 3 and 4 hours long. And it was like, right. there wasn't a beginning. And it just kind of started and it just kind of kept on going. And it was great. I loved it. And it was amazing. And I remember learning some of the first gospel things. I learned how to play from him. And shout to Peyton. And used to do lots of stuff. And it led to I played in gospel churches all over the city.
Right. That's and you've great. Played everywhere, like you said. I mean, you started everywhere. At an early age. I mean, yep. different galas, different...
Mm-hmm. Different corporate events. Yeah. When you're in middle school at the School of the Arts or high school, and you're in the jazz band or you're in some ensemble or you're whatever you do, if you write poetry, you're always doing corporate gigs. They would always send us yeah. to different places at the opening for this yeah. or like... and it was mostly city events. It would mostly be like... stuff for the mayor. This was back when Wellington Webb was the mayor.
Right.
So always stuff for Wellington Webb or like down for the library or all kinds of different corporate things. Maybe the quarterly report of some company. And I'm sure the school got money for it, but we didn't get paid for those. But those were always fun because it was like maybe a 45-minute gig, but you would leave 2 hours earlier and you'd get back to school 2 hours later.
Right.
Somehow you'd have to miss the whole day for that 45-minute gig. But
right. And you were talking about that earlier, how you'd yeah. be like sometimes, oh, I got a gig downtown, and yeah. you know they weren't on it.
No, it was like the Wild Wild West. Like I compared it to like when dispensaries first opened up, and the arts were like known to be exactly. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not now, but they were pretty much everything that there was, and the academics would always bow to whatever kind of things were happening with the arts. If we said we had to play a gig, they would let us go play the gig. If we said that I wasn't going to be able to take this test on that day because we had something going on, that's what was going on. If you were in the school musical, it was like you were definitely going to listen to what the musical director told right. you to do rather than your math teacher.
Math teacher
you
right.
knew that somehow, yeah. some way, you were going to be able to finagle that in math grade, but you could
theater
not
department
mess
was serious
up the theater.
There,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, they took that yep. shit serious, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I went to North High School and we did a production there, and actually a bunch of the kids from DSA were like, "Fuck you guys."
Oh, it was
because we had a huge production.
It was always like that.
The Zoot Suit, this big deal, you know, it was pretty tight, and they were like, "Fuck you guys." At every event, because we were performing at all these things too, you know.
We had no sports teams.
Yeah, so yeah. So that was it.
We couldn't root for our football team. We didn't have like a baseball team or anything. But we used to be the biggest haters at everything. It didn't matter what department it was. We used to sit jazz band in the back of the festival, clowning on everything we could possibly think of. That's all we used to do, and mostly because it wasn't like all true, but it was just so much fun to do. It was so much fun to like just roast everything that you saw. And that was like such a high school,
right? Of course,
high school thing to do. I can imagine that the theater kids are talking shit.
Talking shit. Yeah. Oh God.
Now you know I gotta ask, bro. Did you ever go to band camp?
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For
sure.
For sure.
It wasn't as exciting as they made it out to be.
Did you ever get laid at band camp?
I was gonna say because what they don't tell you about band camp is that there are no girls at band camp.
None at all.
Very few.
Not even
few.
A counselor.
Oh, maybe a counselor or two. But when I was in band camp, it was like I was a teenager, and the counselors were also working musicians. So they were all old jazz musicians.
Got you.
So, or so they weren't old like smooth
not,
jazz musicians.
It was not what the movie
it was. Right. It was not like that. Fucking. I wish it was.
Meatballs.
Yeah. It was not all it was cracked up to be.
No shit like that. And you told me earlier that you kind of got into hip hop and kind of was first exposed to hip hop through the radio station.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, I didn't expect that. Explain that.
You know, back in elementary school in those days, it was like that was the way that you knew somebody was cool because they listened to the same radio station as you. And you had these like group of 10 songs that you all knew.
Right. Right.
So if you didn't know those 10 songs, you were kind of out of the loop. Right. You kind of weren't like cool. And the only way you were going to know those 10 songs was you were going to listen to the radio. You couldn't like fake it and go to the internet. There was no internet. So it was when something came out and everybody else was talking about it and you didn't know anything about it, well, you're like, I gotta go check this shit out.
Right.
When you would listen and find out what it was, then you would go get the CD. And it was always like, oh, well, I want, because when you had CDs back then, it was also that you had so much information in front of you, you got to read about like, oh, this was the producer, this was the person that did the cover artwork.
Yeah.
You know, here's the name of his, they had all the thank yous and you learned like what the name of their dog was or something. So all that hip-hop stuff, when you got the CD, you were able to look at what, like, who produced it and who he has beef with and who the homies are. And you will be like, oh, I've heard of this. I heard of 3-6 Mafia. I know who that is. But, shoot, we used to keep CDs because that's also when I started buying albums and CDs was back when Parental Advisory first came out.
Okay.
So you remember Sound Warehouse?
Yeah.
Sound Warehouse, shout out. Saved my life so many times. That place... amazing. Sound Warehouse over on Evans and Downing was where we used to buy all of our music because it was the closest walking one. But those CDs started to have Parental Advisory stickers and they wouldn't sell it to you. Oh, so it was lucky that we were in DSA at School of the Arts because we had friends that were in high school. So we had friends who were over, I think it was 16.
Okay.
And so you used to be able to talk to one of your friends and get them to go buy the Snoop Dogg album or go buy the Biggie album. And I would keep them somewhere that my parents couldn't find because they, you know, like all parents around that time, they didn't really care what it was. But if it had that sticker on it, now they knew they were supposed to be concerned.
Right.
And they didn't want to be. Yeah. So if they saw that, it'd be like they would gank it from me. They'd be like, damn, take it. And you used to keep those and like they would be, you know, that kind of made them like more important.
Right.
So I used to have that. The hip hop was always like the collection that I had that was like, well, I can't put the Wu-Tang album out there. But I am going to listen to it in my CD player and like at night.
Right.
And Walkman.
Do you remember the first couple CDs you got?
The very first CDs I bought were Beck's Loser and Ice Ice Baby, for sure.
All right.
Ice Ice Baby I knew front to back. But I was also like ABC.
Right.
That was definitely one of the first ones.
Another Bad Creation.
Another Bad Creation.
Aisha.
Yeah. And then all the little Bell Biv DeVoe, of course. That's when Boys to Men. I loved Boys to Men. That Coolie High Harmony album was like
that's classic.
Whew,
on so many different levels.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it was like the first album where I was listening to it, and I kept finding different things every time I would listen to it. I'd be like, oh, I never heard that. That shit's dope. Right. What it looks, listen to what he does over here. And then. Shit, after the...
Were you into, like, that New Jack Swing shit? The Teddy Riley, Blackstreet?
Mint Condition.
Mint Condition.
Mint Condition, for sure. But not really. I mean, I did like that. I mean, Coolie High Harmony, Boys to Men was definitely New Jack Swing. That album was, like... Bell Biv DeVoe was lots of New Jack Swing. And I love that shit. What's crazy about the New Jack Swing beat, that, like, doom doom chicka doo chicka doo chi, is that that's also the same beat that jam bands and... you know, drummers that mean well but don't do well, play when you tell them to play hip-hop.
Gotcha.
So you'll play music, and sometimes you'll be like, oh, I'm okay, and you'll set something up in a groove or whatever it is, and then it's doom, doom, chik, doom, chik. I can't, like, hear that beat anymore and not think of Motown Philly's back again.
Right.
So I have a love-hate relationship with it. Like, I like listening to those old ones, but I hate it when that continues to pop up even though it's not called for.
Right, right. And you started off early. You said, like, you were making, like, beat tapes with your brother in middle school, right?
Well, in middle school, my brother, shout out to Chris, Red Sea. Chris got turntables. We got turntables. And my dad had always had a collection of records. But we were super into turntablism and like the Invisible Scratch Pickles and the X-Men and all that shit was super dope to us. Uh-huh. And we used to take records and I've collected records because jazz was like, especially during that time, records were cheap. There was no internet and jazz was everywhere in the record stores. You could buy all sorts of jazz and that was my shit. So jazz and soul music became the records that I would buy because I had learned about sampling and I had learned about what people were doing when you would hear a song that was pieces of a different song.
Right.
And so it started out with just kind of tapes where we would take like the beginning part. It's like I didn't have any doubles of anything. You know, it wasn't like beat juggling. I wasn't ever a good at scratching and juggling and doing all of those things. I just liked to play the part of the record that didn't have any words on it and then try and pause the tape really quick and bring it back and then play that part of the record again and try and kind of like tape match like that.
Right.
Because my dad had a real dope old school Marantz like tape deck where it had the equalizer on it and it was like big. So it was when it said when you paused it, it was pretty good. It was like pause right there. It wasn't like one of the old school ones where it would pause and then like a couple of little things would roll by and then it would pause.
Right.
So we used to try and make beats like that. And then I didn't start making beats through any MPC or things with pads because when I was growing up playing piano and I started getting keyboards because I needed to play other gigs in middle school and take them somewhere to some place or whatever, I started using the sequencer on the keyboard to make beats.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always like beats with keyboard sounds, just kind of sequencers. And that's, I still play keyboard keys even when I'm like putting drums on beats. I can play pads, but I'm just not comfortable. It's just not comfortable.
It's not your style.
It's not my style. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So making lots of beats. I think I started making beats for people when I started living in New York. So it was beats that I would have, because I had friends that, and we would freestyle over beats, but it was always beats that were already put together. It wasn't like, you know, back in those days with the parties, you would always have cats that had a freestyle cipher. There was always like, you were sitting in a circle smoking weed and then just started rapping over whatever was playing right there. Everybody freestyled. That's just how it went. But it was always stuff that was already out there. It would always be industry beats. It wouldn't be beats that we made. But in college when I was living in New York, that's when I really started making beats for people.
So you were making beats like kind of like stockpiling them, you said earlier, right? And then kind of like everyone on the block kind of found out you make beats.
Yeah.
And everyone in New York's a rapper, right?
Everybody in New York's a rapper. So I had a job that was in the Bronx that I was teaching music at an after-school program with blind and autistic kids. And during the day, I would work with adults and kids that had developmental disabilities. So it would be like music therapy type work where I would have a patient with cerebral palsy and we would think about what kinds of things that would be good for this person if they wanted to be able to make their right hand stronger or some shit. And I would think about different musical things that we could do. And it was a dope job. But at that job, because it was in the Bronx, I was always in the Bronx and I was always around rappers and I was always around cats that knew that I made music because that's what I did at the place, is I was always the music guy. So when I would be in the room by myself and like I would play some like Dr. Dre song or something on the piano, or I would just be messing around and I would play, I would find out somebody, one of the patients likes some TV show theme and I would play it or something. They would hear and then they would talk and then we would find out they make beats and they smoke weed and then that was it.
And before you know it, it's on, right?
And you're like, okay, well then you're getting in the car after work and we're going to the house and we're going to smoke blunts and we're going to listen to these beats you make. Yeah,
and said so you made two albums in New York, right?
Two albums, yeah. It was a group called ABG.
ABG.
ABG, anybody get it?
Anybody get it.
And yeah, shout out, man. I'm PR, Smoke Dog, D-Killer.
Hey, playing.
Damn, that's
this
amazing.
Is in the Bronx.
I forgot Tony's alias, but
those are the names for sure.
Yeah, and this was in the Bronx, and it was amazing. It was great. It was awesome because it was the first time I had to put together an album. It was the first time that they would talk to me about ideas before I made beats. And it was the first time I had to do, I did cover artwork. I did like Photoshop shit because we had an idea about what we wanted, but it was back when like you had to illegally download Photoshop to get it.
Right.
And so it was everything. Making CDs, like how do I print the cover of the album onto the CD itself? Like,
so you learned a lot through your New York experience.
A lot. I didn't have it down like you do. I mean, I didn't have like the duplicators and everything.
Uh-huh.
But shoot, I was putting out CDs. We put out two of them. Gorillaz in the Land of the Lost 1 and 2. Oh, yeah. So I still have those albums, and we have lots of pictures from those albums, and it's great. It's great. It's very New York, and it's very like around the same time where 50 Cent was really big. Dipset was really big.
Right.
So I was living when I was doing that at like 157th and across the river from the Bronx Stadium. And it used to be that you could never go down the street without hearing 50 Cent. You could not do it. It was not possible.
Not happening.
And it was also because that's where all the mixtapes came out. All the G-Unit mixtapes were on Canal Street because they were a New York group. All the Dipset mixtapes were on Canal Street because they were a New York group. So it wasn't always that we would hear all the songs like months before they came out in the rest of the world, because I would come back to Denver and I'd be like, oh, well, this shit's just dropping here because this has been out for a long time. But it was always something where you would hear Dipset down the street, you would hear 50 down the street, and so the albums definitely have that flavor to them.
What made you move to New York or go to New York initially?
Well, I went to New York because I wanted to go to college there. I spent my first year of college in Boston at Berklee College of Music, and then I went to New York to finish college at the New School University. And the New School just had... I'm a jazz piano player. That's my major. That's what my degree is in. So when you think about that and you think about what city you want to live in, it's always New York, because that's where everybody is. That's where all the players that you listen to live. That's where they play. Right. So the list that they would give you of the teachers that you could take lessons from was like amazing. And you could just call these people up and you were like, oh my gosh, like you played with Miles Davis. You played with John Coltrane. Like you just made an album that I bought the other week. Like I cannot believe
like
this.
That,
and you would call them up and you'd just be like, hey, I'm going to the New School. I have three lessons that I can take. Can I take those with you? And you'd work around their tour schedule.
Like that.
Yeah. And they would be back in town and you get to call them up and you would get like references from people where they would say, you need to go take a couple of lessons from this person. I remember playing in the Afro-Cuban Orchestra. And the director told me that you need to go take a couple of lessons with this dude. You need to like get some basics down. And it was great. And I remember that, you know, that class in particular, Cuban music it's amazing. I love Cuban music so much. When Obama opened up the border to Cuba, I went right away.
Oh shit.
And I spent 2 weeks there just taking piano lessons and drum lessons.
No way.
God damn, that's tight, bro.
And it was amazing. You know, Cuba's had such a system where the kids are able to go to places to really delve into the depths of their interests. That's a real nice way of saying it. So you can go to school for 12 years and play lots of piano, and they will teach you all of the classics, all of the fingering, all of the things that you really need to know as a piano player. And then after that, that's when they go start making other music. So the players are so gifted because they're classically trained, and they're not just because of that, but because they play such demanding things at such a young age that they're really able to do the things in their music that is really demanding. Like one of the hardest parts about playing those Afro-Cuban gigs is we would go to clubs and play at the and people would dance and it would be crazy, but doing both of my hands like for hours on end was exhausting.
Holy shit.
It was exhausting. And I always was like, man, I don't know how you do it. But when I went to Cuba and took those lessons, it was like a whole nother world, a whole nother experience. Wow. It was great.
How long were you there?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yep. Really cheap. I had it set up through a whole company that like made tours. And they told me, they were like, so when you go to Cuba, we're going to fly you to Cancun first, because the only flights that were going out to Cuba at that moment were flights that you had to charter from Miami.
Oh,
so
shit.
It was going to cost $1 million to charter a flight from Miami to Cuba.
Yeah.
So I went to Cancun and then took a flight from Cancun to Havana. And then he said, well, it's okay to get your passport stamped, whatever, you know, the last thing that you want to go to Cuba and do is have an argument with the government workers or anybody. So let them stamp your passport if they want to. And when you come back, tell the State Department when you go to the interview at Customs that you were in Cuba. Tell them the truth. Tell them everything.
Right.
Because you don't want to lie to the State Department, number
right.
one.
Right.
And number two, they don't care anymore. They'll pretend like they care, and they'll tell you to sign up on this list, and you should have done this, and you should have done that, and then they'll send you on your way. Yeah. And so I came back, and I had cigars, and I had rum, and I was at the customs counter, and she was like, you know, you probably should have done that, and you should maybe remember that you got to fill out the form, even if you still have to fill out the form, you still have to take it out, the charter flight from America, and get out of here. And so it was all good. Wow. Two bottles of rum, big old box of cigars.
I bet that was an experience.
It was nice. You know, the rum there, because the sugar cane grows there, is on, and it's also because, you know, and it's like, I never liked In-N-Out Burger. I'm going to say that publicly.
It's on the record.
It's on the record.
Hey.
But people have experiences at In-N-Out Burger, you know what I mean? That, like, In-N-Out Burger for people is like, that's where I asked my prom date out, or that's where we went that night when we got real wasted and we had that dope night. Like, it has like a nostalgic feel for people. So I get that. And that's kind of like the same that this is for me. It's kind of like nostalgia. Yeah.
And when you came back from Cuba, did you go to New York or did you come back to Denver?
No, Cuba was only like 6 years ago.
Okay.
It wasn't that long ago. So I came back from New York in 2008. Okay. And that's when I started working and playing here. Because when I left and came back to Denver, my teacher that I was taking with in New York at the time was like, yo, just go to Denver and play and take every gig you get, say yes to everything and play as much as you can. And I was like, okay, cool. That's what I'm going to do. So I went back and I said yes to every gig I got. And some of them, that was a good idea. And a lot of them, that wasn't a good idea. And now I know better.
Learned a lot.
Learned a lot of lessons. Learned a lot of lessons.
What were some of the craziest places you performed? Anything just super out of the...
Okay, so I was fresh back. And I had made Mac maybe for a year. I had done some big wheel gigs. I had been playing some gigs around. And DJ Kamani said that he had, I think it was DJ Kamani. Damn, now I'm thinking maybe it wasn't. But he told me that he wanted me to play piano for this girl's birthday party. He wanted me to play a song, some Stevie Wonder song. And I was like, cool, that's no problem. I can do that. I'll pay you this amount of money. Here's where you go. And here's what time you go there. And I said, okay, cool. Like, no problem at all. And I had no idea what Club Mix was. So... Club Mix is a club on the east side on Colfax.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if Club is around anymore.
It might be.
Might be still around. So I walk into Club Mix. Now, obviously, I'm the only white person there. Obviously, they see this me carrying this keyboard, and it looks like a giant coffin or something. I'm not sure what was going on, but it was like those scenes in the cowboy movies where somebody walks in the saloon, and all of a sudden, everybody stops.
Yeah.
And, like, the jukebox goes, what the fuck, and they were like, what the fuck are you doing here? Yeah. And I was like, yo, come on, ask me to play for the birthday party that's happening. Here's what's going on. And it was a real nice, it was great. It was a real great experience. But like walking in there and doing that gig was like so funny to have that experience happen. And I did not know what Club Mix was. I was like, what are you talking about? Because I remember somebody or people being like, oh, all right, like go ahead.
They just didn't say nothing. They were like, all right, sure. I hope he knows what he's getting into.
It's like, no, it'd be cool. I have no problem. So I'm just like trying to like convince the doorman, yes, this is a keyboard. I promise I'm supposed to be here. Some birthday party happening. I'm just going to play the Stevie Wonder song. And I think it was Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday. So I played that song. Oh, I had a couple of glasses of something, and then I left. And that was it. And it was good. But I've played everywhere. Symphony Spaces, the Strip Club.
We were talking about that earlier. Like around, they couldn't have a venues. Stripper or the live band on the same floor?
Yeah. So... the first Girl Grabbers gig, shout out Jip the Hip, Brick a Brack, we had shout was...
out. Real quick, explain what Girl Grabbers is, though, because they don't know.
Yeah, I should go. And now what's crazy is that every time I say it, and I'm not going to get rid of the name, it's problematic. Girl Grabbers is a problematic name, and I accept that. But we named ourselves Girl Grabbers before it became problematic, and Donald Trump touched somebody, and now it's problematic. So... we're still Girl Grabbers.
Right.
I've had venues that have been asking me to not, even when we haven't gigged for a long time as that, but last time we did, they were like, yo, I don't want to put this on the flyer. I just don't want to do it. That's so funny. I'm not changing it. Girl Grabbers is me and DJ Jip the Hip and DJ Brick a Brack. And me and Jip the Hip would make beats in my basement. And this was back when I lived over off, like on North City Park. And Jip would always come hang out. We would make beats in the basement, had the piano in there. It was huge. And we made a whole bunch of beats together, and they were great. And so we wanted to put them out. And we knew that the group Paradox that Jip is in was doing a gig at the strip club. And that was a place that we could release the album. That's where we could give it away. We could play it.
Right.
And so we said, okay, cool. So we got to come up with like a strip club theme name or something. So we downloaded this file that was all the old posters from like old porn movies. So like all these old porn movies from the 70s. And one of the titles was Girl Grabbers. And so we said, well, that's definitely going to be what it's going to be. And it was just me and Jip. And the cover had two guys on it. It worked out great. So we were Girl Grabbers, and we did that first gig at the strip club. And then we, later, after we released a couple of albums under that name, that's when we added Bric-A-Brac. Because Bric-A-Brac would always come and scratch on stuff anyway.
Right.
All the beats we would make, all the stuff that we would do. And Bric-A-Brac was also DJing for YG, Cedric Avenue. At the same time. So we were all connected. That's and dope. Then we just did Girl Grabbers like that.
That's sick.
Mm-hmm.
Paradox too, and so Jip was DJing for Paradox at the same time.
Jip would DJ for Paradox. Jip would sing with Paradox, rap with Paradox. Rap, yeah.
He did it all.
Yeah, Jip had those albums back in the day where Jip. He used to rap too.
He's the man. He's
We love Jip, man. Jip really opened a lot of doors for me, and Jip really influenced a lot of the stuff that I make and the way that I make it. And he's always been a real great friend. So shout out Jip to Hip for sure.
Big Memphis.
Yep. Yeah. Memphis. Yeah, man. We went. That's the man. And Bric-A-Brac is from Jackson.
Oh, really?
So,
I didn't know that.
Maybe like, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago now, me and Jip and Bric-A-Brac all went back to Jackson and Memphis to like visit Brick's family and, you know, go back to where Jip is from and like just kind of eat Southern food and smoke weed and record shop. Man. And it was great.
That's dope.
It was great.
That's dope. I need to go experience the food down there for sure.
You know, what's crazy about it too is that the Southern recipes have like 5 ingredients. Butter, sugar, milk, flour, and eggs. That's right, it. That's pretty much every Southern recipe. And then you have whatever flavor it is. But they have
mo butter.
They will tell you, even when I asked his mom, because his mom made us this whole big spread, cream corn, sweet potatoes, chicken, green bean, it was everything. And even thinking about putting as much whole cream as she put into those dishes, when she told me how much, like, just like, oh yeah, well, this is a quart of whole cream, and I was like, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can look at myself and pour a whole quart of cream into this, and then cook it, and then just be like,
I'm about to eat this.
I didn't just put 5 sticks of butter in there. I can't do that, but I got over that.
Nice, right.
I got over that real quick.
Right, now the butter's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've gotten so into butter.
Me too.
That you get to figure out what the butter fat is. So when I make croissant, I have to get a butter that has a high fat content. And in America, the butter fat is low. So you have like 17% of the butter that's just like water.
You got to buy that fancy butter.
So if you buy the fancy European butter, then it's got more fat in it. And I didn't think that I was going to be searching through the grocery store like with the butter, like looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
Like trying to break out my bifocals and read it.
Right. You know what the new trick is? And I had to do this a couple times. You got to take a picture of that motherfucker and then just enlarge it on the phone. For real. Like, I was trying to read something the other day with some sugar. I couldn't see that. So I was like, hold up. Let me check it out. I'm always preaching to my dad, like, there's always a way to do something. You just got to think about it.
That's like, a great
idea. Take a picture and just enlarge it and read it real quick. I was like, damn, I'm getting old.
I've been into ghee.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's
ghee's where
clarified butter, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I've been really digging cooking with it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's really...
Do you make it?
Like no, I get like this grass-fed. I get it from a butcher shop, Western Daughters.
I think isn't it just if you melted butter, then you'd be able to separate it. You'd be able to make it yourself.
Yeah, right, filter it.
Yeah. Yep. But you'd have to if you're making edibles, you'd have to let it sit with it for a long time?
Yeah, decarboxylate.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, that's where I need a machine.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Or you just buy the butter.
Right.
Weed ghee.
Yeah.
Some weed ghee.
Yeah.
So the one thing I was talking about earlier is you've done like a lot of
just weed.
A lot of projects with everyone, huh?
Yeah. I've been really lucky to work with a lot of people in town. And, you know, Big Wheel, when Big Wheel started and I started playing gigs with Damien. Damien's a drummer.
Yeah.
Amazing DJ. DJ amazing Check guy. One.
Shout out.
I mean, I love playing with Damien so much. It's gotten to the point where I I could do an entire gig with Damien and not say anything about when we're going to start, when we're going to finish, what we're going to play, what we're going to do. It's so much just intuition and just...
I'll just jam. Like,
just connected. Yeah, exactly.
It's like Kobe and Shaq,
that.
But y'all get along.
I love that. He looks like James Harden. So
he does look like James Harden.
Be,
you said that.
I'd rather
like
be Kevin James Durant. So I'm cool with that.
Who was the white guy for the, not Kurt Rambis either, but who was the other white guy for the fucking Lakers?
Alex Caruso back in
like
last
Luke,
year?
Like Luke, he was like Luke Walton's son or some shit.
You oh, no, like
sounded like back in the day.
I can't do that.
Nah. Oh, but man. Yeah, you've worked with like Foe, like you said, YG.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, so playing the gig with Damien got me a chance to play with everybody in town because we played a weekly gig every Tuesday night. We would play with different rappers and singers. It got me a chance to meet all the rappers that I've played with and the singers that I've played with and instrumental players and poets. And
it's a whole lot of people.
Whole lot of people. And I did albums with Foe. Yep, I did some remix albums for Foe. We've done some tracks for the Dispensary Music Project that he had with YG back when YG was YG and not Cedric Avenue. Right. And then definitely projects where Big Wheel played with all sorts of different rappers from town and would do gigs and play their beats. And do gigs where they would play on or sing or do whatever on top of our beats. And got to meet, Wheelchair Sports Camp. Shout out to Kaylin.
Oh, yeah,
I still do music stuff with her.
Super dope.
A lot of stuff that she did for the project that is in Meow Wolf.
Yeah.
Which was super fun to try and think about and put together. But yeah. I played with a lot of them, but the albums that I've made beats for have been with, shout out DJ Kavem. I used to do stuff with DJ Kavem a lot. Give that guy beats.
And one of the things that we were talking about earlier is your approach to making the beats is different. Like, you're getting the acapellas from Foe, and then you're not listening to the album at all, but then you're just going in and creating your own beats. Talk about that kind of process.
Yeah, because I didn't make beats for rappers and with rappers when I first started making beats, it was always me taking acapellas if I wanted them from the records or right. from whatever single was out. So I started really liking doing that way, and it was fun to be able to take some of the words that they would say and put them in different places in the beat and then change the chorus a little bit and maybe play the third verse first instead of the first verse. And maybe I didn't like that feature on there, so I just cut that person out.
Right.
So I used to make albums with acapellas, and when I first moved to Denver and heard some of the albums that I really liked, I was like, yo, would you mind if I got a copy of the acapella? Because before I moved back from Denver, one of the big beat projects that everybody did when you were producing at that time was a Black Album project. Hova released the Black Album on acapella, and it was it was amazing. And we had never seen anything like that before. You didn't just get the single, you got to remix the whole album.
That's dope.
So for the first time, beat makers in their bedrooms were like, yo, I could make a story. I could make an arc. I could have interesting elements.
Right.
And Danger Mouse made that Gray Album project with it, where he took the Black Album and he put the Beatles' White Album, and he made beats with the White Album, and then that was the Gray Album.
Wow.
And so it got so popular, and everybody at that time that I knew that made beats all had done a Black Album project. So you finally got to do a whole album from front to back, and so you could do weird shit where you're saying like, okay, I'm only going to sample things that have 1980s Persian sounds in them, or I'm going to sample the belly dancing songs, or I'm going to sample this, or you make just get real high and say like, yo, what did the Black Album, the White Album, like you can make a Gray Album, and that's how it happens.
Right.
So when I came back and I was able to get that same kind of thing from people like Foe and people like Aries Jackson, who's still to this day I always get beats from or get acapellas from, which is always dope. I love to take the album and not listen to anything that they did with it already and just take the vocals and put together something that I can make. And it might not always line up the way they had it lined up when they did theirs. It might be in a different place in the song. I might move some of the parts around, but I feel comfortable doing that because I know that it's already out there. You already made this album. You already put it out the way you had it in your mind. It's already out there. And you gave this to me and you're not here right now, so I'm going to do whatever I want with it. And so I would move things around and I would move words and whatever. And it was great. And so I love that approach. And I find it easier for me to remix things rather than okay, now come over, we're going to have a conversation, and that is going to build into some song.
Right.
That process takes so long.
You're kind of cutting like you said, a big chunk of that meet and greet, that do I want to fuck with you, that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I would just go after people. I'd be like, yo, can I get that?
Right.
I want that album. Like, can I? Do you have the acapellas?
You remember who the first person you asked, or first couple people?
It was, who did it? I think DJ Kava might have given to me voluntarily. He may have given a few to me voluntarily, but it was Foe, and it was, dang, how did that come about? I forget how that came about. I don't know that's, I don't remember that story. I'm high right now, but I can't remember how we did that. I remember that it was back when Haven was on the scene. Shout out Haven.
Uh-huh.
It was back when Karma was doing stuff around too. So it wasn't just Foe. It was like,
it was Jewel Time.
Yeah, Jewel Time. 800. Oh, man. Everybody. Shout out for sure to 800. 800 has given me so much crazy stuff.
Sick.
And I, once I started, like, I forget which one was first, but then I was like, okay, well, your homie's with him. I want yours too, and yours too, and gotcha. Yours too, and all that stuff. And I don't have from everybody. I just didn't get them. So a lot of people don't have access to them, and I get that. Like, you did some session with an engineer a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You don't remember where those masters are. You don't have any idea. So,
well, I'll tell you what. I learned something right now. I've always been trying to get some Qnox beats, but now I know I just got to record some songs and then get you the acapellas, and then I'll get my beats.
I'll
just pick out some dope ass beats and have them record that shit and strip them and be like, here's your acapellas. And I'm sure in a month or so, I'm dead ass, bro. And if you're listening to this, think about that right there. He just told you the key, because I'm telling you, he makes dope shit.
I like the acapellas.
About to do it.
Hell yeah.
Yes. And then it's fun to listen to him and hear about, like, oh, dang, I can't believe, like, oh, that sounds so much different than I thought. Or I'll talk about what the album, what I think the album, like, sounds like, or what I think it's about, and they're like, oh, dang, that's totally different than I thought. But that happens with your own shit, because every day I hear people, well, not every day. I hear people that are like, oh, I like, this was my favorite song on the shit that you put out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, that one? That's the one that was this close to not making it.
Right.
Like, that's the one that's literally on there so that I have 20 tracks instead of 19.
That's how it happens.
That's it.
Damn. The shit we think is tight, it's all right. It's pretty good. It's B plus. But the shit that we think whack that we put at the back, that's the one that they really like.
That's always the one that they pick to fuck with.
Hey, I was going to ask you, who's the cat, the DJ cat on the MPC with the mask that be making fucking crazy song, remix songs like that? You know what I'm talking about or not? I see him on the gram all the time.
With the mask?
Yeah, he wears a mask. He has different masks, like a red mask. And yeah, he be getting it. I'm going to have to find that
with
out.
With turntables?
Nah, he has like an MPC, and he be totally remixing them. He does this one like down in the D. This shit is hard as fuck.
So there's so much talent out there. There's so much talent out there. And now, you know, it's cool to make a beat tape. You can put out beat tapes. Back in the day, there was like, the only time that you would do something like that would be if it was the like single and you had one side that was an instrumental.
Right. Unless you was Dilla.
Put him out. Unless you were Dilla, or you were doing it. Like, I mean, I say that I wasn't, but I wasn't doing it until later on anyway. But it wasn't getting mainstream play. You couldn't, like, put on a beat tape and everybody would have it. It'd be like, you had it.
Right.
I was the only one. And if you wanted a copy, I could make you a copy, but I don't want to because it's making my tape wear out.
Right. You got to get your own copy.
You remember when CDs, first burnable CDs came out?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, dog. I got like on the first, like the piece, the CD burner, like how not the computer, the one you plug in the wall and you fucking.
Yep. How did you get your first music, though, to burn onto a CD?
Oh, Kazaa.
Oh, shit, Kazaa.
I was burning CD to CD, so I would grab a song off this CD and grab off that one, then line it up, and then burn the whole shit.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I didn't even have the internet.
Do that too.
Did you ever use Napster?
Napster.
Did you ever do that shit?
Yep. My mom used to get pissed. She'd be trying to call the crib, and the phone be all busy and shit. It's like, I've been calling 20 million fucking times. Yep. What are you doing? Like, trying to get music.
Yep.
Hold on. It's going to be 10 minutes.
Right.
For this one song. And then what was crazy about those places like Napster and them is that it would be like, okay, here's a song with Busta Rhymes, Mary
the
J.
Super
Blige,
remix,
Snoop Dogg. And you'd be like, what the fuck? God. And then you get it and it'd be like
some whack ass shit.
Yeah, you're like,
some
okay, this is definitely
shit.
Not what it is.
Right.
That's not what that was.
Somebody's fucking shit that they made at home.
But we used to think that it wasn't going to last. Like, yo, this is not going to last. We used to burn everything. Yeah. Download it, burn it. Download it, burn it. Download it, burn it.
Have your friends bring you CDs to work that they downloaded and burned for you, and you're trading them, just whatever, just trying to follow that crazy shit.
Yep. And that's what also you would find, like, these 9 gigabyte files that was just like, okay, I'm going to give you the whole Hypnotized Mind catalog.
Right.
Everything that anybody ever put out. Or the whole No Limit catalog.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Like, here's just 8 gigs of every No Limit anything.
Everything.
All the sea murders and even Silk the Shockers.
Everything. You might not want all of it, but you don't get it.
Right.
And you're definitely not going to know all of it. You're always going to be like, who the fuck is this?
Dude? I know it, man.
Like, oh, that's the one dude that's on the remix of this one song. Right, he has a whole album.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to have to start a part two here, so I'm going to stop.
Oh.